Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of Bigfoot Notes from the Field. I'm your host, William Jevning. Before we get started, I wanted to cover a few things. The first item is, have you or someone you know had a Sasquatch encounter, and would you be willing to talk to me privately about it? If so, you can contact me at my personal emails, williamjevning@yahoo.com or wjevning@gmail.com, and I will absolutely guarantee your anonymity for both persons and locations. I'd really like to hear from you, so please contact me. The next item on the list, of course, listening to this show, you're familiar with our format. Every week we do a weekly discussion on various topics. The other podcast that I do is called Witness of the Unknown. If you like to hear witness accounts as told by the witnesses themselves, then you'll enjoy that show. It's hosted on Podbean. If you go to Podbean, in the search box, just type in Witness of the Unknown, and it'll take you directly to the site. It's a very good show. Everyone really likes it. So please become a subscriber. The next item on the list is, if you haven't been to my website, williamjevning.com, I encourage you to go there. I have a blog, links to both shows, the team pages with contact information. We have teams everywhere. You can go there. If you've got a question, you want to talk to them, if you'd like to join up, please feel free to contact anyone on the team pages. I have an online shop. If you're looking for all sorts of Bigfoot-related products, there are links to my books there. And as I said, you can become a JRG member, Jevney Research Group, just by going on the website. The next item, and last, is if you haven't seen our Facebook page, it's the JRG Bigfoot Research Group page. There's lots of interesting stuff there. We have fun. We joke around. Everybody talks Bigfoot without a lot of the silliness that goes on, so I encourage everyone to go to that. Thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, everyone. Today I'm talking with Jay and Chris. Chris is in Alberta. He's one of our actually new JRG members, good friend. And Jay, of course, our Southeast Regional Director. Welcome, fellas.
Hello.
Hey, good evening.
We're going to talk about a number of things today. We chatted before we started a little bit. We sort of had lots of different things we were interested in. So I know Jay, you know, sent me a text with a suggestion about, and this is something that a lot of people ask, you know, they want to know, is a Sasquatch an ape? Is it a hominid? You know, just what is it? Well, the bottom line, of course, is we don't know what it is. That's, you know, the first and foremost honest answer. I mean, until, you know, we've got one or two of them that can be studied firsthand, you know, probably, you know, a dead one, and they're observed in the wild, you know, for an extended time period by experts, you know, anthropologists and such, you know, who can figure out what exactly they are, where they fit into the whole primate family. I did a little bit of looking before we started. I mean, and when you look online at the dictionary, it doesn't give great definitions for what a hominid is. It's actually very small, and it talks about, of course, human beings. We're the only living hominid, as they classify hominids. Although there's some recent work where there were actually people wanting to put chimps, gorillas, and orangutans in the hominid family. So I'm not really sure what differentiates different species to belong in the hominid family, but if I were to have my guess, I would say the Sasquatch is probably a hominid. They know there were at least seven different species of hominids that existed at one time. And of course, you know, Neanderthals. Neanderthals weren't really human. They were a different species. We're Homo sapien. They're Homo neanderthalensis. So it's a different species of creature. So, fellas, I don't know where you want to jump in on this, but I'll sort of let you have the floor.
Well, kind of seems that it would, I think it would be a different species as well, but I mean, everything is kind of open for discussion. When you hear the different things, especially trail cameras, that kind of gets my goat. I mean, why aren't they on trail cameras? I've heard people say that maybe they see infrared. I don't know much that does see infrared in the animal kingdom. I think there's some vipers that do, some snakes. There's not a whole lot. I think you can sense infrared in different animals. I don't know about sight. So that would classify it altogether, if that's a possibility, something completely different than we know. Can we see infrared? Well, possibly. I don't think we're used to it. If it's a primate, I'm pretty sure primates see in three colors, as we do. That's really interesting. So I don't know. Like you said, it's we don't know. We can only go by what we have.
Actually, Chris, I've done a little bit of reading on this. And you know, you're partially correct and partially incorrect. That to answer the question about chimps and apes, they're bichromatic or trichromatic.
I thought chimps and apes were tri, but...
No, what I read about it said they were bichromatic and that actually some monkeys were monochromatic. But that puts them, you know, farther behind than us necessarily. But there was, and we talked about this when we kind of did an interview a couple of months ago about comparative anthropology. And I'd read a study, I want to say it was out of Sweden, that they recently did a test in laboratory condition about the human eye, you know, whether, because I had that same question. I mean, it always comes up, and that's very intriguing to me when I've talked to other people who are researchers and they're serious about what they do, and, you know, they claimed to have been out there and had multiple sightings and things and said, yeah, I had a reaction. I personally haven't had a reaction. I wasn't at the time that, you know, I had my thermal out there. These things were already staring at us. So, you know, they knew we were there, but I didn't have anything that would put off infrared at the time with me, you know, to see if there was a reaction myself. But they did a test with the human eye where they pulsed the green infrared laser at the back of the human eye, and those chemical preceptors would fire at a certain rate where they would see the green infrared light. Well, you know,
that's interesting.
Visible light that between 1,000 hertz and 16,000 hertz, I believe it is. And the infrared spectrum is more like 400 to 1,000. It's below, you know, they say around 700 to 1,000 down to like 400 hertz. And someone could correct me if I'm wrong on that, but so the mechanism is there, but you know, we receive, if it's at a higher frequency, you know, that photon is hitting that chemical preceptor and firing it, so we see our visible light. Well, when they did this test, they're actually firing two photons at that photo preceptor and tricking it into thinking that it's receiving it at a higher rate, you know, at a higher frequency. So, you know, that just tells me that we're on the border, you know, we're on the cusp. And if you take your game camera or night vision scope and you go out there and you flip on the IR and you turn around and look at that IR flashlight, you see the red light. Now, you don't see the reflected light, but you see the emitter, you know, but our eye won't pick up that reflected light, right? So
that's interesting, because if these creatures do see or can pick up IR, now here's the interesting thing. Would they be attracted to it as a hunting, or would they be distracted from it as a warning? Well, why would they be able to pick it up?
Here's one thing about primates, and this is pretty much across the board. Anything that's not natural in a primate's habitat area, they're extremely wary of. So they would shy away from it. And now that's not, even if the camera is there in broad daylight, you know, if they see something man-made or something that does not belong in their area, that's a cause for alarm, and they'll avoid that.
That's very interesting. Wow.
You know, if they did develop that ability, what use would it be in nature? Because it's already been proposed that we are the way we are because of environmental pressures, or that, you know, we were predated to near extinction. I mean, that's strictly the scientific hypothesis, you know, with evolution.
The reading you did it mention anything about animals who were primarily nocturnal hunters, about their visual acuity?
Not really. The only thing that I've read about binaural or nocturnal animals was that they had, you know, a tapetum lucidum, that thin membrane inside the eye that captures photons or, you know, emissions of light rays when they go in, strike the back of the eye, and they're reflected. It allows that to be reflected, you know, and capture that light. So that's, you know, why we see the you know, eye shine and that from nocturnal or binaural animals.
Right.
So, you know, but that doesn't mean that, you know, cats and dogs and coyote and owls, things like that, see an infrared. You know, so I'm, it's an interesting question, but kind of here's where I'm at on it. That's something that, you know, we were talking about, kind of pushing down the road, but this falls in that area, is, you know, human beings are very linear thinkers. You know, we have a beginning and an end. We think, you know, in time span, and we usually segment things very in a standard way. So when you start talking about this creature, people say, well, where does it fall? You know, and I did a lot of reading about the differences between, and, you know, we're all primates, but let's say for sake of argument, you know, that primates are great apes, chimps, and, you know, lesser monkey thing. But we'll just characterize ourselves as humans, and then we've got the in-between. You know, the primary differences that we've talked about before is, you know, we both, you know, what do we share? Well, we share 97% of our DNA. We share 23 sets of teeth. You know, we share a similar biological structure, you know. But what are our differences? Well, you know, there's a 3% difference in DNA, but that 3% got us to the moon.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference, huge gap, but yet 97% is the same. So, so we have, you know, brain capacity, brain size. You know, we're 40% larger, our brain mass, than great apes. You know, we don't have prehensile feet, so, you know, we don't have hands for feet, basically. You know, those differences that we have that sets us aside from great apes is what we commonly hear about in this creature. So I think it places us closer to us than it does to them. Now,
it does, and there are some big differences, obviously.
Right, but my opinion was it doesn't place it in between us. I think these things overlap both sides and far exceed us in something. You know, like, obviously muscle mass and power. You know, if they have the same size brain, and we don't know really, you know, what their vocal structure is, even though, you know, I clearly have, I mean, by my own witness, understand that they've got a vocal range that is way beyond our capability, that they can produce power and have a pair of lungs that far exceeds ours, and, you know, suggests a very large chest cavity and everything. We've got feces, you know, that are tubular and in volume that is boggling the mind of biologists that, you know, we can't produce. These are very large creatures, but the ability to move silently in the woods like they do, you know, their foot structure that, you know, even Dr. Jeff Meldrum, you know, goes on about, and, you know, many others have talked about, you know, how that structure is built to support that large creature in weight, and what we've seen and other people have testified to as their gait, you know, how it differs from ours. You know, all of those things suggest some level of superiority, you know, when it comes to their environment.
Well, here's one thing.
And I heard what I thought was language. So if they have an ability to produce language, that suggests higher intellect too. But then you're like, why are they running around hairy with no clothes and acting more like apes, you know, and things? So it's a really odd thing for humans to get our minds around.
Well, as humans, we like to place our own, you know, what we are onto other creatures. You know, the Sasquatch may exhibit some of these things that are similar, you know, but they're still a wild creature. and they're probably a species that's older than us. I mean, you know, we like to think that we've been around so long, and but there were a lot of hominid species that came out of Africa and went around the world long before. I think bipedal walking has been around something like 7.5 million years. So we're really a latecomer when it comes to that, and we're not even very well adapted to bipedal walking. It's why we have so many, you know, knee, back, ankle problems, you know, with our bodies, because we're not really developed that well for bipedal walking, where you get a creature like the Sasquatch. It's obviously been very successful, been around a long time, and a lot of our native folks, and Chris, I know you'll attest to this, you know, talk about the creatures being here before they came to these areas. They were already here.
Yeah, pretty interesting when you go back to some of the stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, something that I was thinking about also, you know, before we started today, in one of John Green's books, and he talked, you know, of course, in southern British Columbia, a lot of the native folks there are, they're Salish people.
Yep.
So I had a little brain dysfunction there for a moment. and one of the things that he mentioned in one of his books that was really fascinating, and I can't remember what they called this particular creature. It was a particular name. And of course, you know, natives have a lot of different names for them. But how it translated was, and I think it was, you know, because a lot of different languages don't translate well into English, whether it's, you know, native languages or European languages or
yeah, whatever. For sure.
But I think the closest it came was ventriloquist. And what they meant was imitating other sounds.
Yeah, that's really cool. Wow.
And it was really fast. It always stuck with me because I've heard a lot of vocals over the years. And of course, with like Jay and other people I've talked to that have heard different vocals, there's so many different kinds, and the kinds of imitations, it's always off just a little bit. It's never.
It's like what I told you there last week about those goose calls I was hearing, and
exactly.
I was like, that's just not right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's one of these things. It's I bring that up because when Jay mentioned language, I suspect they don't have language. Because that's a very specialized, it's very specialized to human beings, to Homo sapiens. It's not something that's just picked up by any species. It goes right in there like with our thumb use. That's the way we use our thumb in conjunction with the rest of our hand is a highly specialized, highly developed and specialized part of our brain that can do that. Same with speech. And it's not something just any animal can pick up. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
Let me ask you this, Bill. I've heard it hypothesized, and it's been this way for a long time, that they suggested that the brain development was due to bipedalism, the necessity to be upright. Well, they've gone back on that recently and said it really doesn't take as much for someone to move with bipedal locomotion as we thought it did.
Right.
So that isn't necessarily what they think may have caused this development. So what, when you're hearing this back and forth between, because, you know, I clearly heard in the distance, like one doing this to the other one, and then they came together closer, and it sounded like that same kind of samurai chatter stuff. Do you think that it's not, you know, I don't know that I wouldn't call it language.
Well, here's the thing. See, if you look at chimps and gorillas, they're pretty much all primates do that. I mean, they vocalize to each other, and usually it's a group-specific thing. In other words, whatever it means in a particular group, you know, a family group or whatever term they apply to these different groups of primates.
But that growls and grunts and hoots and
right.
Whistles and things like that, not something that sounds like samurai chatter back and forth.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and it seems to have a cadence too, doesn't it?
I mean, it. I, you know, when you listen to the Ron Moorhead audio, and I said this in a previous interview, honestly, when I heard that, and I apologize to anybody listening that would be insulted by this, but I thought it was BS. And I heard another guy, you know, that went out, and it was in the winter, and the guy was, you know, supposedly habituating with these things, and he had a buddy with him, and I mean, he would even, like, draw tic-tac-toe stuff in the snow and come back, and this thing would have marked in the snow or something. But, you know, I was hearing this kind of sound coming, but it was kind of convenient that every time he heard this, he was by himself and his buddy's in the cabin.
Yeah.
And when I heard his buddy's voice, it was very deep and it sounded very much like this samurai chatter. So I kind of reinforced my doubt about that until I heard it in the woods myself. And
right.
I went, okay, either someone is hoaxing us right now, you know, or me, or this is real. And I heard, I mean, I've read reports because I was very interested in Fort Hood, Louisiana, in that area, because that's where I had that first, you know, 50 foot away, you know, very intense thing. But where guys were training back there, an officer it was either down pilot, but it was in the Vietnam era because they used that for general training a lot of things. And he was in an evasion training, but he was hiding off the edge of this road. And he heard two people coming up the road, mumbling very under their breath, kind of, to each other. And he said it was really dark out, and it kept getting closer. But he said it ended up sounding like people talking backwards or some kind of a, you know, odd language kind of thing. And then he said when it got close enough, he realized, you know, he like kind of went, you know, what are you guys doing here? And he said they stopped and took off back in the same direction they came from. And he realized those weren't troops. You know, those weren't guards, you know, looking for him or anything, you know. But that was an account on another website, you know, that I had read about that was back in, you know, the early 60s. You know, early to mid 60s. So I'm like, you know, that I've heard this over and over again where they're talking about exchanges between these things. And what I heard sounded like and almost some of it had almost a Middle Eastern kind of sound where it was a, you know, some, you know, to imitate it, I would sound foolish, but.
I hear you.
Tried to do this before, but it was like a, you know, and then the other one would go, you know, like, I mean, it sounds crazy, but it was clear as a bell, and it's out in the woods in front of us, and then these two things come running at us, you know, these smaller things come running at us. If that hadn't happened, I would have thought, okay, they found a trail, and they're walking up this trail, and maybe whatever, had the second part of that not happened, I wouldn't have given it any credibility. But now, you know, I mean, when that happened, I was like, okay, I can't explain that.
You know, it's funny you say that. I've had two experiences myself with vocalizations. The second one, I really can't tell you if it was authentic. I'd like to think it wasn't. But it could have been. I know the first one definitely was, and I wasn't by myself, but it sounds almost exactly how you're describing it. The second time I had heard it, it did sound, it sounds ridiculous to say, but it sounded like a Japanese girl's singing. It was almost falsetto. And it was definitely language. And that's the thing that freaks me out about all these stories. And yours, the one that you just relayed, and is the consistency of the language of it. It sounds like communication back and forth.
Yeah. You know, if they have a brain the same size as ours or larger, whatever, I can't rule out that, you know, like you said.
Yeah. That's an uncomfortable thought too.
Not taking it apart. you know, it's one of those where I'm not going to limit my understanding. Mm-hmm. I'm expanding my experiences and validating or invalidating my own personal hypothesis. You know, I don't want to, and like I said, the first time, if it ever happens, that I see one of these things do something outside of what I can perceive as possible in the natural world, I'm out. I mean, if I see a pair of eyes floating in the, you know, broad daylight in front of me or some crazy thing, I'm out. I'm, you know, this, everything I have experienced so far, and I don't want to, you know, like I said, offend anybody that might be listening who may be experiencing something different. You know, is to me plausible with these, pertaining to these creatures in our physical environment. You know, this really loud, deep nostril exhale that we heard a couple of weeks ago. You know, I immediately went, okay, that's either a big damn buck, you know, or something different, but it has a very, all you know is it took a big breath, you didn't hear it, but you heard this big exhale. And it's a nostril exhale. I thought, that's a big pair of lungs. But to move from up the ridge to, you know, down right next to where we are and only be 30 feet away in all that leaf litter and everything, you know, I'm like, that was completely silent. Completely silent. And it was, had to be masked because it did it again. And then right after that, you know, we saw, you know, these thermal pop, you know, very large. I mean, I can't explain how big and wide this thing looks. I found a picture on the internet when I was kind of searching around, and it's an image, and I want to say it's up in Alaska. It may be up in northern Canada, but it's of a very dark, wide figure kind of coming around the end of a grove of trees, like the tree grove is to its left, and it's kind of in the tall grass coming around, but it's kind of leaning out and looking at whoever took the picture. And you can see face, you can see the broad shoulder, but it's very, very broad, rounded shoulders and squared off look. It's not something that you can, I mean, it's very difficult to tell someone about it. And when you have no basis of comparison, you know, for somebody to go, well, that's a problem. You know, or something that, well, then it was probably something else or whatever. And I'm like, man, you know, this was huge. I didn't see it in broad daylight. I didn't have a big bright glass light on it. You know, so I can't say, you know, it wasn't like the Sarah Brown, you know, the Brown thermal image where, you know, the cow walks in front. You know, the funny thing is I've shown that picture and the video clip to a couple other people, and they don't see it. I mean, flat out, they're like, what am I looking at? And I'm like, you don't see head, shoulders, clavicle, pec muscles, eye sockets, you don't. And they're like, no, I'm not, I don't get that out of that at all. And I'm like, okay, here we go. This is pareidolia then, because to me, what's clear to someone else isn't. You know, so...
That's true. That's like that thing on Facebook about the dress that everybody was flipping out about. Was it blue or was it white?
I didn't even see that. But...
I'm sorry. There's a thing on Facebook, just what you were saying about...
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I missed it.
No, I got it. But that's a little bit different because you're looking at a dress. You know, that one is more a perception of you know, what kind of color deficit you might have, you know, and how you perceive or how your display, your monitor, you know, shows that to you. So, you know, if somebody with a dark blue pair of shoes may look black, to someone else it might look something else. Pareidolia is where, you know, you look at a floor tile and see a face, or, you know, it's the blob squatch in the woods and somebody's like, see there, I see that, and it's just a dark shadow or something that looks like it's negative space between trees, or you know, you look at a cloud and you see a bunny rabbit, you know, or something. You know, that's pareidolia. So when someone else is looking at a shape, and you can't for certain say this is what that is, and you're making an assumption about it, then that can be considered, you know, pareidolia. To me, if it's just the picture, I would go there, you know. And Will, you and I've done this where, you know, you look at that picture from Michigan, and it's like, okay, is that a grizzly bear mauling a stump? Is that, you know, clearly something furry? You know, is it something running away? It kind of looks like it's doing this. Kind of looks like, but you don't have the context of the rest of that situation. You know, you don't know the location, you don't know the before and after, you know, there's nothing else to corroborate that. But if you're out in the woods and you've seen, you know, tree structure in an area where other people have had reports, and then, you know, something is, you know, making racket at you that's kind of odd, and then you're seeing, you know, something else, well, you put all of those things together, and it's like, okay, that's kind of corroborating. You know, that's not just, okay, take a look at this picture and tell me what you think. Chris, let me ask you, you know, this thing that really, it's impressive, but there are many other animals that move silently in nature. And American Indians have, you know, a very rich history and culture of, you know, being able to move through nature, you know, silently. When I tell somebody, man, it's hard for me to get my head wrapped around, because, you know, a buck deer, I mean, does not move silently in the woods. You know, they snort and wheeze and everything, but they also tromp and stomp and push, and, you know, they're not silent creatures. Deer in general,
well,
aren't silent unless they're sitting still.
Yes and no. I mean, whitetail are extremely intelligent compared to muleys. I've seen whitetail belly crawl through a bush. I've seen them be extremely silent. Part of my training tracking was to tag a muley on the butt. Now, that's easier to do stalking than a whitetail. But, I mean, when they're in rut, oh, yeah. I mean, that's the time where you can better their mind, because they're on a different track. So you can trick them for quietness anyway. But I have seen them be deadly silent. I don't know the difference between the southern states and up here, but we got tons of whitetail in lots of provinces, and I have seen, I mean, they could be very, very tricky compared to muleys anyway.
I've been around whitetail, and that's all we have down here is whitetail, but I haven't come across any that I mean aren't crunching leaves or making some sort of sound, especially when they've come in contact with humans. You know, they tend to, you know, kind of like alert and then bolt. They may not go far, you know, but they go far enough where they feel like they're kind of out of eyeshot, and they'll either freeze or, you know, tuck into a tree or you know, do something like that. But, you know, to go from 60 feet up the hill, snort, and then come down the hill where they're just right even with us, and then do it again, and then be gone. And, I mean, no thermal image. You know, I'm looking up the hill, I'm looking in the woods, and not seeing anything in that woods. So
well,
it's
Jay,
started to go that way.
Here are two possibilities in that situation. One is, you have to remember, the Sasquatch is an apex predator. I mean, they're not just going to go stomping around making a bunch of noise, just like big cats don't and other predators don't. The other possibility is you didn't hear it come downhill because there were two of them. One was already down in the lower location.
Well, I mean, but then we would have, then we didn't hear it get that close. You know what I mean? Either way, they're moving silently.
Right.
But when
and
I
they
turned
do.
To look downhill, we ended up seeing three. You know, we saw there was one standing in this 4x4 trail, you know, looking up the hill at us, and it squatted down, and, you know, through what I saw and what Danny saw and then what Jason saw and then my son, you know, as we're hand passing this thermal back and forth, you know, we pieced it all together, the chronology of this thing, was we saw one standing up, I handed it to Danny, was standing up and squatted down. he hands it to his son Jason, and he sees it stand up and bolt into the wood, you know, standing up. Then I get it back. I see one down on all fours crawling across that trail very carefully, you know, into the brush, and then hand it to my son. He sees one squatting on the right side of the road up there, again, very large, and then slowly it goes down on its belly and low crawls into the brush. And then 15 feet behind it, you know, here goes a canine, you know, like trolling across back there that he described what sounded kind of to me like a coyote or wolf, but, you know. So I, you know, that to me, and we've discussed this before, was increased levels of security. And it was immediately after that last snort, because, I mean, within 30, 40 seconds, because I was moving towards that wood line to get in there and see if I could pick anything up on thermal. And as I'm moving towards that, I just scan down in the valley, and here's this thing standing there looking up the hill at it. So, you know, I may be anthropomorphizing here, or I might be putting things together, you know, but I'm trying to make sense of it in my head, is that this thing was coming over the ridge down through the woods and sense us, you know, whether it's sound or smell or whatever, but I think it smelled us. I think the breeze was coming up the hill a little bit, but there was like no wind that night. And it snorted. And then it moved closer and it did it again and immediately moved on. To me, are you there?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. I got another call coming in. I thought I lost it today. I immediately thought that was, you know, like a trick, you know, a distraction. Like it was like trying to get moved closer and hit it again, you know, to try and get our attention. And instead of, you know, moving off in the woods and looking in there, I turn around and look down the hill, and there's something standing down there already. And I don't think it teleported down there. I think, you know, I think whatever was going, the ones traveling with it were already down there, continued to move, and then it went down and joined them. So I think this was a group, whatever it was that was big, was a group of three, no doubt. And they had a canine with them. But they were, you know, compared to my son, when he stood down there the next day, these things dwarfed him. I mean, he's 6 foot. It was a foot or 2 feet taller than he was, and way wider. You know, so, you know, I don't know. And, you know, then we get some alerts and runs away twice, and then we had some growl at us a couple of times up there while we were parked, and, you know, getting in our vehicles, in and out of our vehicles and stuff. So, you know, I have the sense that these things just kind of like we annoyed them. You know, like it was, you know, and well, we've talked about it, that I don't think that we have nearly the impact on these creatures that we think we did, or at least that I thought we did. You know, people that go out and do this, you know, for years and years and years may understand this already, but, you know, I think they're very wary of us. I think they keep their distance where they feel like they need to, but as long as they got an eye shot on you with a sentry, you know, out on the border, so they're going to still forage and feed, do what they got to do to make their money in the wilderness, you know. And once you start moving out and they alert or they follow you, you know, maybe one of them, maybe not all of them, just one of them. And you know, to make sure you're far enough out of the area that you're away from whatever they're doing, you know. And if you don't leave like what they think you do should, you know, they get agitated and they'll growl or throw things or shake trees or, you know, throw a fit, whatever, you know. Like, the first time I had an experience was I stopped and then I started peeing on the ground. And that clearly upset this thing, you know. So.
Yeah, and it's going to depend on the group and their disposition and all that kind of stuff, you know, we talked about before. It's not a blanket behavior across the board, you know, from one group to the next. So that's something people need to understand. You know, you had one experience with this group, that's how they behave, but you know, you could go back there in 2 weeks and their behavior might be very different.
Yeah, well, I mean, these didn't, you know, these things did yell at us. We didn't have anything thrown at us. It was a very stealthy, you know, got a couple snorts, and okay, maybe that was a buck deer over there, but there was still something crossing down in front of us that wasn't deer. You know, I mean, I don't know how else to explain that, you know, that in my mind, I link all these things together. They may have been completely separate events. It's possible that, you know, it was just a bunch of random events that happened that night, and it just kind of all fell in together. But, you know, like I said, I haven't had the either fortune or misfortune of seeing one of these things face-to-face in daylight or, you know, talk about a short-changing, you know, event or under a flash.
Yeah, Chris and I can relate to that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Chris, what was your, for myself and for anybody else that's listening, you know, some people have heard me, you know, go on about bit pieces or whatever of what got me into this, but, you know, I'm not, what put this on the radar for you? Where are you at?
I had heard about it, obviously, before my experience having Native in my family tree there. So I'd heard the stories, and for me, it was cool stories. I didn't disbelieve them or believe them. I just thought, yeah, cool. I had experience on a hunting trip and carry over to the next day. And that's what did it for me. So as I tell Will a couple times, it was like, I'm incredibly intrigued by everything, more so now, but I don't really want to see another one.
Briefly, if you would, just for my sake, can you kind of give us the short version of that? Because I'm not aware. What happened?
We were on a hunting trip, and it was basically a canoe hunting trip. Second day into it, we came across a sandbar in the tributary river, and fresh elk had just passed there. So we decided, if we can hold off for 2 days, elk didn't open up until that Monday. This was a Saturday. We could get on them, possibly tag one out, and be really, really happy. So we set up camp really quick, and we all kind of buggered off into the bush on our different ways. Two went one way, one went the middle, I went on the outside. I was in there a good distance, kilometer and a half-ish, kilometer and three-quarters, and I almost simultaneously had this disgusting, repugnant odor and this cough sound. It was more of a concussion. You could feel the cough. I say it's a cough. I don't know if it's a cough, but I could only attribute it to the sound of a cough, like a deep, guttural cough, and I froze. I absolutely just stopped, and I tried to wait it out. And during that time, I was flipping out, and really, really odd for me, because I know the bush. I'm comfortable in the bush. I love the rules of the bush, you know, because you're the odd man out there. And I couldn't stay still any longer, and I just basically stepped and looked over my shoulder. I was locked and loaded, by the way, fully locked and loaded. And as I had turned, I felt like I was being watched. And as I turned to look behind me, because I was flipped right out, and that was the only time I had my composure enough to actually move, was to just make that step and look. And the bush in front of me just exploded. And I whipped around, and I caught things moving, getting up off the ground. And then I focused on this thing right in front of me that just basically stood up from either a squatting or sitting position or something, where it was completely out of sight. They were all completely out of sight until I turned and moved, and it stood up, and it seemed like an eternity. I can't lie and say it was 30, 40 seconds, because it probably wasn't more than 3 seconds. And I was out of there. I ran as fast as I could until I couldn't run anymore. And I got my breath, and then I kind of made my way back to camp. With every third or fourth step, I was looking over my shoulder. Like, I was freaked right out. Went to sleep that night. I had a hard time getting to sleep. I was falling in and out of sleep. It was close to 1, maybe 2 in the morning, and we were woke up by this ginormous yowl this scream, this elongated, nasty scream that was nothing I know of. My brother-in-law shot how right up, that, and he's...
Hey, Chris, let me interrupt here for a second. How,
yep.
That scream you heard, how did it start and how did it finish?
It just started. It was just this loud, ravenous, deep, guttural, angry... It wasn't a scream and it wasn't a yell. I call it a yowl. And it went on far too long than it should have. It was an immense capacity. It was a long time. I bugle for elk. I'm a dang good bugler. I know what I'm doing. And this went on for way long. Like, this was a huge breath. And we only heard the one, and it went on a long time. Anybody would have ran out of breath really, really quick.
Hey, and you try and explain to somebody, when I'm in Louisiana, this thing at first sounded like a gorilla gets mad, but it was a very raspy, almost asthmatic, like there's something wrong with the lungs or something. Breath that I heard, this big breathe, and then it started this ape-like, you know, very ape-like, and it did that. It did 5 to 7 of those, and then it dropped down into this roar, this barrel-chested, deep guttural roar that kept coming out and elevating as it was doing it, until at the top end it sounded like a woman screaming, but it wasn't,
it wasn't
like a woman screaming scared. It was like a woman getting her flesh torn from her body. It was the most evil thing I think I've ever heard projected, but like you said, it was so long.
I mean,
it started and it just kept going, and at the very end it projected that last bit out. I mean, it was like pushing whatever air it had left out at me. But the whole time, I could feel everything in me shaking.
You know what's weird is the decibel level to me was massive. That decibel level was just incredible.
I was 17 kilometers away from this fob, and I would have sworn they heard it. It just echoed through the woods. I mean, just echoed. And then it turned and stomped away on 2 feet, and it broke a bunch of brush and everything. I mean, you hear these trees popping. And all this stuff as it stomped away. But I have never heard, the only person, and I'm trying to get him on for an interview, if you will, is a couple up in Oregon a few years ago were on one of his other shows, and he imitated that same sound, you know, and it was the beginning and the roar, you know, but he didn't go on about, you know, how it cavitated him or anything. He just said, you know, it was really loud and deep, and then it went up into this high pitch, you know. But he imitated that whooping sound, you know, that ape-like whooping sound. And so I called him to talk to him about it and everything, and he said, yeah, I didn't really go on about that, but he said, I thought it was right outside my window. And he said, it was 100 yards away in the woods yelling at their house, and it was still shaking their inside the house.
You know, Chris,
you know, and their windows cracked open, but still.
Chris, your description of what you heard sounds very similar to what we heard up in the Olympic Mountains about, 12, 15 years ago. And it was up on a ridge above everybody, you know, where this massive ridge divides the Quinault River. And it just reverberated. It was just like what you heard. Just the one time, and again, the decibel level was off the charts, and you could hear. And it was funny; it was silent when it finished, and you could you could hear people and dogs all up and down the river. Just it was like this. It was fear. Everybody was saying, "My God, what was that? What was that?" And dogs were barking, and it was crazy. It was crazy. For anybody that's heard this, we each have this kind of a noise. It's you can't describe it. I mean, you can put words to it, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Here's the thing. Immediately you know that's outside the vocal range of a human being.
Absolutely. Oh, nobody can make
it. I knew right off the bat, that's alien. Don't want to be here any longer.
Yeah, and you know that
this don't belong.
the lung capacity part. So, you know, right off the bat, you're like, that shit didn't just happen. No, that happened, you know? And
yeah.
So I was talking to, it's funny enough, his name's Chris also, and I think that's who was trying to call in here just a little bit ago. He's in South Georgia, called about something that they had heard. And, you know, I try not to do this to people when I'm going to interview them, you know, when they're talking to about it, because it aggravates me so. When somebody immediately says, "Oh well, you know, have you ever heard of mountain lion?" You know, have you ever heard of, you know, vixen scream from a fox, you know, stuff? And I'm like, you just don't understand.
They don't.
You can't articulate it to them. You can describe it all you want. You can say, "Hey, this went on for way too long." It's like those snorts.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the thing, is I'm aware of those things, too. I know what vultures sound like. I know what fishers sound like when they're fighting. I've watched them fight and rip each other to shreds.
I know
what these things sound like, but this isn't right.
You know it's a massive animal that makes the noise.
Oh, yeah, it got the point across.
Where seriously large predators are. I'm in north central Alabama. We don't have grizzly bears down here, by God, unless somebody was raising one and it got lit. You know, we do have the occasional mountain lion, even though Fish and Game will say, "Oh, there's no mountain lions in Alabama." Well, there are. Too many people have seen them. You know, family members have seen them. You know, they're here. Everybody knows it. I got a guy that goes to my church. He'll take you down to a cave and show you where one's living right now with some pub. You know, so it's you know, but those things are around, and yeah, they can produce some power, some noise, and you know, I've heard peacocks. You know, gets crazy, weird sound, you know, but this is something entirely different. And, you know, when you hear something that sounds like an ape, a monkey, an ape, you know, that not a monkey, but, you know, not the doing that stuff, but that really agitated ape-like thing out in nature, you're like, we don't have those here. You know, that's not supposed to be here. You know, Les Stroud said the same thing when he was in Alberta or he was in Alaska. He had two things that he said put it kind of in the, hey, there's something going on here for him. And it was when he was out in the wilderness by himself, and he said within 30 feet or something like that, in the marsh, he heard, and he's like, what the flip? You know, he's like, that's really stupid. You know, and he's been vocal about it. He said he's talked about it on, you know, Joe Rogan's radio show and other places and things where he's recounted this. But he's like, I wasn't recording at the time. He's like, I didn't capture that. But he's like, where I was, he's like, they dropped me by helicopter and I walked for God knows how long. He's like, just me and whatever that was. So he's like, this is not supposed to be here. You know, so it's a freaky thing that definitely reset, you know, your understanding of what's out there. But like I said, you know, this moving around silently, it freaks me out, because when you're out there at night and you're thinking, okay, you know, I may not hear this thing coming. It might be right next to us. It might walk up behind us or something. We won't know until it's there. And Will, you said you've had one
two feet behind me.
You had no idea, you know.
No, there was no clue.
I've heard people, soldiers on patrol, and this again, I've heard Fort Stewart, I've heard, you know, Louisiana, where they were on a patrol and something was shadowing them and kept going in between their group as they were walking through the woods. And every so often, they'd hear it, you know, or they'd catch where it was, but you know, how fast it was and the freedom of movement. At first, they thought it was somebody that was off board, you know, and that was messing with them. But, you know, the way this thing moved around, you know, freedom in the woods, they knew it wasn't somebody with night vision goggles running around in the pitch dark. You know, it was different. So, you know, that's, it's spooky, but it's still within the natural world. It's within the capability of these things. That's why I say, some behavior seems like it overlaps more like an ape, and other things seem like they overlap more like a human, but beyond, you know, our abilities.
Our capabilities, yeah.
Our environment, you know. So, you know, it's very intriguing. It's a little scary at the same time, but, you know.
It is scary to think about. The scarier thing to think about is the language bit. I mean, that there's something out there that's massive, can communicate with each other, and it ain't us.
Right.
And that now, they could possibly reason.
When you're looking at it, we talked about this a week or a couple of weeks ago about gorillas, you know, that they've learned sign language. They,
right.
They mm-hmm. Understand the concept of deceit. You know, that there is higher level thinking here with just those animals. So, you know, if these have an ability to reason and exhibit certain behaviors or things that, you know, I don't, you know, that suggests a higher level of cognition, a higher level of intelligence there. But
for sure.
You know, why are they not, or are they making tools? You know, why are they not seen, you know, wearing skins or advancing
things like, well, now just because we do those things doesn't mean, now you have to look at a Sasquatch, they're very well adapted to their surroundings. So there's a lot of things they don't need to do that we need to do because we can't. We don't have the physical capabilities to manipulate the environment unless we create things to do that. And now I'll preface this. I do have someone who may have found a stone tool used by a Sasquatch. We don't know yet. I'm waiting for the pictures and to run it by our forensic anthropologist. He actually told me some time ago, a couple of years ago, that they should be using some form of rudimentary tools. It may be something we don't recognize.
Right.
Due to what it is or the scale. And I'm not talking about structures and things like that. It's some objects they may use to manipulate whatever it is they're doing in the environment. So
something they found in their environment, though. And we know chimps are known to use up to 20 different kinds of tools.
Sure.
And they're found in their environment, but they adapt something that they found in nature to do what they want, and then they carry the tool with them to their feeding site for the purpose of extracting whatever food they want.
Yeah, usually grass, things like that.
They know that Neanderthals used to process their prey. You know, they rip their heads off, and then they would pull the skins off of them. That's processing, you know, your meat.
Well, and I'll tell you something. I'll tell you something we recently got that's a manipulation. It's not necessarily tool use, and I'm going to be putting this in the next book, the book I'm putting together right now, and it's the book title is called A Case for the Existence of the Sasquatch. We just got, and Jeremiah sent me the pictures of a deer hung up 11 feet in a tree. Now, the first thing people are going to think, oh, a cat did that. No. If you go, you can go to any, in just about any state website, fish and game, universities who've studied cougars, they don't typically drag, North American cats don't drag a kill up in a tree. They eat part of it right where they are, and then they'll cover it and come back later for it. And I did some checking with my sources. The Sasquatch will sometimes, and it's not often, but sometimes they'll hang a deer kill or some animal kill up in a tree to draw in more animals. And it's really smart. It's a very intelligent thing to do because you're expanding your food source exponentially by, you know, you made one kill and you could eat that and get the benefits from it. But if you want to bring in more because of that kill, that's pretty smart. You could just kind of hang out, conserve your energy, and you keep attracting more food.
Mm-hmm. There's the other thing, too, is when I think I mentioned last time we talked, Will, about there is old stories that certain native tribes at one time did trade with them occasionally, and not all of them,
Sure.
I have heard stories where they used to trade. Now, I'm not saying that they used to meet and go to the saloon and get a sarsaparilla and trade, but they would have their rudimentary
trade. My cousin does have a story, and I don't know what to think about it, but he was told to it by his grandfather that there was some implement of tools and geese involved in this story. And I can't remember if it was a type of snare or if it was a type of rope or implement like that to harvest the rest of his geese over his shoulder. But that was the story, that he had seen this creature with a pile of geese and there was some sort of implement involved. And I can't remember which it was. It was something along that line, but I don't know what to think of it. But
I would expect something about, like that.
Let me ask you about tree knuckle, because this is something that, that weighed on me a little bit when we were out, you know, in Derry here a few weeks ago and got that thermal hit. This is an area where, or this gentleman, Danny, said he was hunting with his oldest son and heard really loud wood knocks. And you know, his description, and I've heard this from other people, that it was like being at a baseball stadium and somebody just really knocks the crap out of one, you know.
Jay, you've heard the recording we got from Brandy, right?
Yes.
It reminds me of a gunshot.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's so loud. It's like seasoned wood on seasoned wood. Well, listen, everything I saw out there in that environment was deadfall, rotting on the ground, in the leaf litter. All the trees had bark on them. You know, it wasn't like, oh, there's hickory, you know, laying all over the place. Here's a bare hickory tree that I could just smack. And if I pick up something and I crack it against a tree as hard as I possibly can, you're going to hear it, but it's kind of muffled, you know, with the bark and kind of the rotted wood. So I'm like, are these things carrying something with them to knock, or are they producing that sound some other means? I mean, I'm picturing a 12-inch pair of hands clapping really hard or something. You know, I mean, I don't know, but, you know, apes will slap their chest. Chimps will smack their feet on trees. They'll slap things and stuff. But, you know, I have trouble thinking of, okay, if you're just out wandering aimlessly through the woods and you're going to try and, you know, make some other in your group aware that there's something over there they should, you know, watch if that's what they're doing, you know, just an assumption that's what they're doing, and you just pick up your random thing and hit it, I have trouble with something trying to create that noise.
Listen,
now,
fellas,
I did here the other night, I took my daughter back there the next weekend, and it was a completely different environment. There were small animals, you know, moving in the woods, and wind was blowing, and temperature was dropping like crazy. It was about froze to death out there. But at one point, I did hear on that same ridgeline something fairly large, the two of them, kind of coming along the ridge towards us a little bit. And it was, I thought, okay, that sounds like deer to me. That sounds like something that's a little bit bigger. But at one point, up on the ridge behind us, in the same direction as the first snorts we heard, but farther away, it's right on the edge of, did I hear that? But it was enough where I grabbed Danny's arm because he was starting to move a little bit and like to get him to sit still. And I pointed up the hill and I heard what sounded like almost like rock on rock, you know, a clack, 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 you know, just a fairly, just kind of like that, a clack, clack, clack.
Hey, fellas.
And then I was like, I signed that to it. You know, I grabbed his arm and I pointed up the hill. I didn't grab him, I just kind of touched him, and, you know, up the hill, and then I motioned this, you know, and I went very quietly, I went back, and he shook his head, you know, but, you know, not sure that he heard it, so, you know, that,
hey, Jay, Jay,
is that rock, that them clacking their teeth, or, you know.
Fellas, we're out of time, we're going to have to pick up the conversation on another episode. I'm going to add Brandy's recording, the one she got. That's what we're talking about. This very loud, you know, crack against a tree or something, so everybody can hear what we're talking about. But as soon as we're done, I'll put that on the end of the recording. Fellas, any final quick thoughts before we wrap it up?
Oh, just thanks for having me on.
Anytime, Chris. You're always welcome, buddy. Same with you, Jay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation. I look forward to talking to Chris some more.
We'll definitely.
Yeah, for sure, man.
We'll definitely pick it up again maybe in a couple of weeks. So we'll, depending on you guys, let me know what your schedule is, and we'll set it up. So thanks, everyone, for joining us tonight. What's that?
I was just saying, unfortunately, some of these conversations we have generate more questions than answers.
That's the nature of the subject. Thanks for joining us, everyone. As I mentioned a short moment ago, I'm about to play a clip that was recorded by one of our members near Fort Lewis, Washington, a few months back. It's of, it sounds like what people would refer to as a wood knock. And it's not just a tap on a tree or something simplistic like that. To me, it actually sounds almost like a gunshot. You can tell there's a great deal of force. So take a listen, and thanks for listening this evening, folks.